It's time for The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's The Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, and maybe a listener on 100.3 FM, kind of in the metro Boston area. We have a pretty good show planned for today. We're going to be talking with Matt Williams. He is from Hartz Corporation. They are the people that make almost all the nice convertible tops you see out there, and we'll be hopefully talking to him shortly. And then, a little bit later, we're going to be finding out how ride sharing has to do with Earth Day, which is tomorrow, in case you forgot, in case you didn't get your Earth Day card. And then also, I was at the New England Motor Press Association meeting this week, and actually Doug Hartz was there from Hartz, and learning something about the all-new Jeep Wrangler, and I have a little taped interview with the folks from Jeep about that. So we had a lot of things going on this week. And then there'll be the road test of the week, which is in a BMW SUV. And because of that, we'll also have some BMW trivia. So we have a lot of things going on today. So, and hopefully they're all good. So there we go. There we go. That's the plan. So all we will maybe give Matt Williams a call, see if he's his number's at the top there. This is Inside Radio. This is how we do it somewhere.
Yeah, in some places.
In some places. Here. This is how we do it here. It's exactly how we do it. So his number's at the top. This is an interesting headline from Automotive News. It says VW's new way to sell Jetta, more car for less money. When the redesigned 2019 Volkswagen Jetta begins arriving in the U.S. Dealerships next month, the brand's 650 dealers will be asked to do something they have little experience with, and that's sell what been Volkswagen's most popular model as a value play. The strategy, moving away from the brand's traditional premium pricing in a highly competitive and declining compact car segment, is possible in part because the seventh generation Jetta was designed exclusively for the U.S., which means it didn't have to be engineered with for both the demanding German driving cycle and sustained speeds of 130 miles an hour or more. So sounds kind of interesting. And I guess also part of it, they do a 0 to 70 to 0 driving cycle. Didn't know that. And so it looks like it's going to be pretty interesting. The newest model will have a 1.4-liter turbo or 1.5-liter turbo, 8-speed automatic, a CVT transmission. One's going to make 147 horsepower. One's going to make 174 horsepower. Fuel economy, 30-city, 40-highway, 32-city, 42-highway. So great fuel economy. And a base price of $27,795 on the premium edition, and $27,715 on the touring edition. So looks pretty good. Nothing from Matt Williams, huh?
Not at this time.
Well, you left him a message, though, I bet.
Of course.
Next week, we're actually going to be talking to Paul Clark of Paul Clark Volkswagen.
Allegedly,
yeah. Yeah, we've been kind of striking out a little bit here. But Paul Clark's out of town this weekend, but next weekend he's going to be back in town. And what I really want to talk to him about is all these diesels that are sitting over in the South Weymouth Navy Base, South Point, whatever they call that now. South Point?
Something like that, yeah.
South Point. Well, there's 10,000, slight exaggeration, but maybe not, Volkswagen diesel sitting over there. And apparently they have been doing some periodic maintenance. I don't know what that means exactly, but they've been doing some periodic maintenance to the cars. And then they're starting to retrofit them and starting to sell them. So I've heard they're a pretty good value if you want to buy a diesel. Now, a lot of them are, you know, several years old now, but they've been sitting there, and I guess they're going to recondition them all, warranty them all, and and they're starting to show up on the dealerships now as, I guess, certified used cars. So I wanted to talk to somebody at Volkswagen, so I figured why not where we bought our Volkswagen.
So I read an article in the New York Post a few weeks ago about the hundreds of thousands of Volkswagen diesel in sitting in parking lots throughout the United States.
Like here.
Yep. Yeah. And that they are doing periodic maintenance to them, but they said that they don't know if they're ever going to be able to be sold.
Well, they're starting to sell some.
Okay.
Now, they might not be able to sell all of them, depending on which ones they are, but they are going to, I understand they're starting to sell some. And I was talking to somebody who was at Scott Volkswagen down in, they're either in northern Rhode Island or southern Massachusetts. They're right on the border. In fact, we had Brad Scott on the radio show a couple of years ago when he had, to talk about the Rhode Island Auto Show. And he's starting to get a few in as well. And it seems to be kind of little, you know, it seems to be here and there throughout the Volkswagen dealers where they're starting to do that. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that all works out. But I'm interested in it because the Volkswagen diesel prior to the retrofit was one of the, you know, that was a car that if you talk to people who write about cars, they'll tell you, no, go buy the Volkswagen Sport Wagon or the Golf Wagon or whatever, Jetta Wagon or whatever version of it you want to get the diesel engine and get the manual transmission. And they are just fun cars to drive and great gas mileage or diesel mileage and good handling and good utility because it's a little wagon, a little sportback thing. So it really offers a lot for people. So there's a lot to do with that. So there's a guy by the name of Jim Farley. Jim Farley is an executive. When I first met Jim Farley, he was an executive with Pontiac. Now he's got something to do with Ford Motor Company. By something, I mean he's like really in charge. And the article here says how Jim Farley saved Ford $6 million in one day, which I thought was a pretty interesting headline, which drew my attention to it. And it says, ever spend too much money on clothes? Jim Farley can relate. Well, A, I've never spent too much money on clothes. I don't think Dennis has either because he's wearing his work shirt.
Yeah.
But Farley became Ford Motor Company's president of global markets in June after a two-year stint in Germany where he oversaw the end of an aggressive restructuring plan to save the company money. The turnaround had included painful plant closures, thousands of layoffs, as well as refocusing of Ford's portfolio on profit-rich commercial vehicles and popular performance variants. But Farley was able to wring some extra cash out of an unlikely place, workers' closets. And it goes on to say, when I got to Europe, things were pretty tough, Farley told Automotive News. Someone said, hey, Jim, we've restructured about 10 times. There's no more money you can save here. And the person was wrong. While sitting in the cafeteria on his second day of the job, Farley said he was told that Ford bought T-shirts for thousands of employees across roughly 50 facilities across the region. But certain countries were paying vastly more than others. Workers in Germany, for example, got fancy shirts with big sewn-on blue oval logos that were meant to withstand washes every day. Meanwhile, workers in Romania got much cheaper shirts that would often wear out in less than a week. In a follow-up meeting, he and a colleague laid out every shirt Ford bought for workers, then chose a single provider. We picked a really good T-shirt and saved $6 million. It's a lot of money on shirts.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Which means somebody was getting taken advantage of.
Somewhere
I don't care what they
said. Yep.
Yeah. He said he's taking the lesson back in his new role to the U.S., where CEO Jim Hackett is hyper-focused on attacking costs and improving Ford's operational fitness. What I learned was to ask questions. Farley said there's always room for efficiency. The other big news this week was with Cadillac. Cadillac moved their offices from Detroit to New York a few years ago. And rather than go with traditional sort of media, they decided Cadillac should be the fashion brand. And they were at all the fashion shows. They were at all kinds of events. They haven't been selling any cars. So they moved, I guess, they moved the operation back to Detroit this week and fired the person who was in charge. So, you know, you kind of look at those things. And even that, I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were talking about how the word gets out about vehicles today. And this program is one of the ways people, you know, people hear about things. My column in the Boston Globe is one way. The reviews I do in our AAA publication, your AAA, is another way. But there is a, there has been, and there still is somewhat of a big push to try to have the influencer market be the ones where all that should be. So the influencers are people who blog and have Instagram pages and Facebook pages and Twitter pages and all of that, and try to promote cars through that. But all I ever see with some of these posts is they'll bring a bunch of local influencers on a fancy trip somewhere, and you hear about the food, but you don't really hear about the event, or you don't hear about the car. You just hear about, well, the lobster thermidor was great, but you don't hear about the car they went there to go see, because they're not car people. And it's not even to the point where they say, oh, then we took the car on a family vacation and it held our family of four and our golden retriever. They don't really say much about the car. So I don't, they spend a ton of money on these events to the point where, you know, I've heard, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I don't know that they're getting their money's worth. So maybe somebody like Jim Farley, you know, has an answer to that. Well, I don't know what's going on with Matt Williams. I want to really hear about, he was going to give us some advice on how to maintain your convertible top, spring clean your convertible. It's spring cleaning type of season. So I don't know. I don't know where he went. I know where Doug Hartz is. He's out in Arizona visiting his parents. Because he said, oh, yeah, I can't do it because I would have, but I'm out in Arizona that day.
Where in Arizona?
I didn't ask.
Oh, Arizona's, just for the listeners, Arizona is my paradise on earth, especially Sedona.
Sedona is, I've only been to Arizona once, and I did go to Sedona, and I did go to the Vortex, or whatever it's called. Vortex?
There's a lot of vortexes.
Yeah, there. I don't know, but this was the Vortex. One of the things about Arizona that I found fascinating, as I was driving through Arizona to go somewhere, I saw a junkyard. I was with a guy who worked at Hemmings Motor News. So I said, and a guy, Dave Brunell, really, he has since passed away, but he knew more about old cars than nearly anyone I've ever met. And I said to Dave, hey, that's a pretty cool looking junkyard. Do you want to stop? And he goes, yeah, sure. So we stopped at this junkyard. We're walking around. It had a lot of motorcycles and bicycles and some old cars. And we're walking around. We see the guy who looks like Grizzly Adams, comes out of somewhere, and we got talking to him, and apparently he moved most of the stuff from Washington State. So he literally moved a junkyard from Washington State. And we just kind of hung around with him for a little bit and talked about old cars and bicycles and old motorcycles, and just an interesting character in a weird way. So, well, why don't we, you have that Jeep interview keyed up there? So, I was at the New England Motor Press meeting this month, just this past Tuesday, and I got to sit down with the director of the Jeep brand, Scott Tallon. And my question was, tell me about the new powertrain that's available on the new Jeep Wrangler.
Yep, we have a couple of new products we're in the process of rolling out right now, but the big news is the powertrain for both of them. The all-new Wrangler and the 2019 redesigned Cherokee both get an all-new 2-liter direct-injected turbocharged 4-cylinder engine. Both are new for the products for this model year.
And some people will think, oh, 2-liter sounds kind of small, until you take it for a ride, and it's a whole different story.
Yeah, you know, it's by far one of the most advanced engines really in the marketplace today. I mean, the engine's absolutely phenomenal. So in the Cherokee, in both configurations, it makes 295 pound-feet of torque, which, of course, if you're off-roading in a Wrangler, that's really good. And it's also mated to our mild hybrid system in the Wrangler, which is a 48-volt hybrid system. It actually fills in that torque gap at the very initial launch at low RPMs. It's even better for off-roading and applying the torque. In the Cherokee, it is not applied with the mild hybrid system, but you really get the best of both worlds. You get great on-road acceleration, 31 miles per gallon. You can still tow 4,000 pounds.
What was the mileage again? 31 miles per gallon on the highway?
31 miles per gallon on the highway. And to be able to tow 4,000 pounds and great acceleration. So it's really the best combination of everything.
Now, tell me a little bit about the 48-volt mile hybrid system. It uses a separate battery pack? How's that work?
Yep, has a separate battery pack in the Wrangler itself. It has regenerative braking, so you're always having a charge to the battery. But what the real intent is at low speeds, is to help, again, fill in that initial torque gap, which is good for, obviously, the torque and the acceleration piece, but it's good for emissions and greenhouse gas, and overall city fuel economy gets a benefit as well, too.
So you're using systems similar to what a Ferrari hybrid would use?
It's no different. It's just a scaled-down system of it. It's a little bit smaller voltage. It's limited in how much electrical power and output it can be provided, but it still serves the exact same purpose, improve efficiency and improve performance.
And from my limited drive in the Wrangler, a little bit different feel to it, a little bit more control feel, especially out on the highway. Feels more like a vehicle you want to drive every day.
Yeah, you know, a lot of effort went into that piece alone. I mean, the driving dynamics, we knew that were always going to be a challenge, just given the configuration of the vehicle. It's a full-frame vehicle, solid front and rear axles. It's built to go off-road. But to be able to change the driving dynamics as much as we have, I would say that it's vastly improved over the prior generation. And no doubt, customers, as soon as they get in, within the first 100 feet, they realize how much smoother it is. It soaks up bumps. It's quiet. It's comfortable. It's much more livable as a daily driver.
And it looks like, at least with the cloth top, you don't need three other people to help you move the top around.
No, that was another big piece of feedback. I mean, the one of the signature attributes is the fact that you can take the top down in a Wrangler. There's nothing else like it. But in the prior generation JK, it was a little bit of a cumbersome process. I mean, it was 10 or 12 steps, and you had to get them just right, or you could pinch a finger. Here, flip the roof back, one pull of the handle, the top's completely down and out of the way. So made it much easier to use.
And one thing about Jeeps, and people ask me about Jeeps all the time, is the used ones hold their value like crazy, to the point where, you know, some people ask me about buying a late model Jeep, and I'm like, just go buy a new one. It's because the ones that are a couple of years old are just great investments.
They are, and you know, the Wrangler has always had phenomenal resale. We just won the resale value from ALG again this year for the 2018 Wrangler. But we've also made a conscious effort across our business to help reduce fleet sales over the last 12 months or so, to do just that, to improve the residual, improve the resale value for our customers. But the Wrangler is an extremely sought-after vehicle. We're fortunate to be in the position we're in.
And we're not going to put the Hellcat engine in the Wrangler?
Not announcing any Hellcat Wrangler today, no. We went four-cylinder. We went the other direction.
All right. Thanks.
That was some interesting information about the Jeep Wrangler. And I was totally shocked with the idea that they're using a 48-volt hybrid system. And I was wondering when I drove it. They told me, oh, it's a four-cylinder turbocharged engine. And turbocharged engines typically don't have a lot of – it takes a little minute for the turbocharger, a little while for the turbocharger to sort of spool up and get moving. And they've added this hybrid system, which gives it that low-end power, which is – what you want if you are going off-road to be able to, you know, crawl over a rock or do something that requires a little bit more effort. And it was surprising. I was in it with another guy, Jim McPherson, also known as a car doctor from Connecticut, by the way. But he doesn't do a show anymore. But I was with Jim, and he's every time he stepped on the gas, it was almost chirping the tires. He's like, well, that's kind of a surprise. And I said, yeah, maybe it's just the way it's geared or whatever the case is. So, Dennis, what do you feel about Necco wafers and the Necco wafer panic if they're going away.
I don't like them. I don't like the hearts thing. I was never a fan, even growing up as a little kid. The only thing that I did like is that on the Necco wafers, they had a root beer flavored one. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But well, on that, no.
Well, you know, there's thoughts that the New England confectionery company that makes Necco wafers is going out of business. And people are hoarding them. But 23-year-old Katie Samuels of Florida, because everything weird happens in Florida.
Florida, not like the rest of us.
Right. Contacted the Necco company to trade her used Honda Accord for all of our Necco wafers. She has a, she said she's in fact dead serious. She told us over the phone that she wants to trade her car for all the Necco wafers this company called thecandystore.com has in stock, I guess. He said, she says here, she went on to say that she doesn't have much else to offer right now and that her boyfriend drives her around in his truck mostly anyway. Plus, there's a bus station not too far if I need it. Katie estimated in her desperate pitch to us the car could be worth up to $4,000 and that would buy a lot of Necco wafers. Please say yes, she pleaded. Unfortunately, we're not a used car dealership, and we had to graciously turn down the offer. She ended up buying a couple boxes on her credit card anyway. Now she has 48 rolls of Necco wafers to ration over a lifetime with many years to go. When you run the math, Katie can have 2 Necco wafers a month until her 94th birthday. Who wants 2 Necco wafers? If you're going to have some, you want more than 2. Not enough. Maybe Honda or CarMax would be willing to entertain a trade-in for her car. A nice older woman called and said she wanted to buy 100 pounds of the junior roll size of Necco wafers. When she mentioned they're better for vacuum sealing, our team pressed for details. Long story short, this woman plans to vacuum seal Necco wafers so that her supply will remain fresh for years.
I didn't know Neccos went bad.
I didn't think they would.
I mean,
either.
They could go stale, I guess.
I don't think so. I don't know.
I mean, they taste pretty stale.
And unless the packaging has changed a lot, they're not exactly in an airtight package.
It's a wax wrapping, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so, you know, people are crazy about Necco wafers, I guess. I don't quite understand it, but people like Necco wafers. There is an old story that the guys at Car Talk, Tom Ray and their producer Doug, used to play pranks on each other. And John Lawler, who was their technical, spiritual, and menu advisor for the show, and supposedly, you know, knew something about cars, which he does, but he got the bright idea. The producer, Doug Berman, liked nice pens, and Doug had a Mont Blanc pen, and they stole it, and they sent him a ransom note. You know, like an old-timey ransom note, you know, with letters cut out of the newspaper, glued on the paper. And it said, to get your pen back, we need 25 packages of the elusive chocolate Necco wafer. Or else you get your pen back in pieces. So what happened was, no one realized that Doug Berman lived behind the Necco factory. So I guess for the next month, every day, there was packages of Necco wafers showing up in these guys' mailboxes. Everything they opened had Necco wafers falling out of them. They said that wasn't what they planned on. It didn't go quite the way they wanted, but it was a way just to shake them up a little bit and see what happens. So there's probably still somewhere in some car that I'll probably test drive someday. I'll open the glove compartment. It'll be full of chocolate Necco wafers. But it was just one of those odd things that happened. Why don't we take a break? Because I think it's time to do that. And when we come back, let's find out a little bit about car sharing and Earth Day. Sounds like a good idea to me. We'll be right back. Well,
I went out in my rig to some Saturday tracks that I heard was big. My rig is a thick old Cadillac towing a big double A that is jet black. That thing on behind is so flossy and clean.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WIROL, the Spirit of Boston. Hey, do you know what Maven is?
No.
No? Well, on the phone with us is Alex Karras. He is the Smart Cities Chief with Maven. And good morning, Alex, and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston. Alex, what exactly is Maven?
Yeah, great question. Maven is General Motors' sort of mobility platform. So a little over 2 years ago, we sort of self-created a startup within GM to start imagining how do we work in this sort of mobility space. So it has multiple services right now. So a traditional car sharing service that's called Maven City, and a derivative of that's called Maven Home. So think about if you were living in an apartment building, you would have some dedicated cars in your parking lot. And then we have a third service called Maven Gig, which we help folks that are participating in the gig economy. So things like Instacart and Grubhub and Uber and Lyft. We rent vehicles into those folks who are using the vehicles commercially to do it. But we envision Maven overall as doing and supporting anything from active mobility, walking or biking, all the way to transit integration. So how do we work with cities in that space?
And Sunday is Earth Day, and Earth Day is a good time to reflect back. And, you know, even if you can't share a car, maybe you can at least look at your commute and say, you know, is there a way that I can shave 10 miles a week off my commute or 20 miles a week off my commute to try to reduce the amount of oil and gas I use and lower vehicle emissions? But a good way to do that is if you maybe don't own a car at all, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do it, and I think, to your point, you know, as we think about how we use a car, there's a lot of options for folks. So maybe it's combining errands and putting less miles, but it's also maybe sharing a commute and finding folks in your neighborhood who work or live or play where you do and finding who do that. Another version of it is exactly what you described, which is, you know, folks who are living in urban centers, how do you sort of shed yourself of the obligation, if you will, of a car and being able to sort of reimagine the way you interact. So not owning a car and being able only to, you know, rent it when you need it for Maven City and if it's going to run errands and picking up groceries on the weekdays or taking a long trip, making sure you have convenient access is really what Maven's all about.
And I was in Manhattan a few weeks ago at the New York Auto Show, and I was out kind of driving around a little bit, and I saw a couple of parking lots that had the Maven sign posted there, and I wasn't quite sure what that meant, but those are maybe apartments or condos where Maven cars are available?
It could be apartment condos. It could be also a public setting. And so a great example, a personal example was this past weekend, I took the family from Detroit to Washington, D.C. to enjoy the museums and whatnot. We jumped in a taxi to our hotel, and then across the street was one of our Maven City stations. And so I took the kids to Mount Vernon, and instead of having to rent a car for 4 days, I, you know, rented it right on the spot. Spent the day and went out to Mount Vernon with the family, brought it back and dropped it off. It's a real seamless experience. So you can sign up for membership using your phone. You can actually reserve the vehicle using your phone. When you walk up to the vehicle, you can unlock it with your phone. And then when you jump in the car, the phone acts as your key fob and you can start it. So my wife looked at me. It was the first time she had used it and was like, oh, man, this is so easy. And so that's the point. How do we make using a vehicle feel like ownership and really so seamless that when we get in the car and you plug in your phone, you got your music and your maps, and you can just use it just like you also do. And, you know, we have the benefit of OnStar and a lot of other services within General Motors in our system that I think a lot of people enjoy, and really mimics the ownership experience. So whether you're in Manhattan, you're in Boston, you're in D.C., or 17 other cities we're in, there's a real nice opportunity to sort of rethink how you sort of interact with mobility in a city.
And, you know, when you're sitting in a car and you're sitting in Boston traffic or Detroit traffic or Manhattan traffic, and you're sitting there and you're idling, you're just wasting fuel. But Maven has a pretty good fleet of electric vehicles as well, right?
Yeah, so again, one of the benefits of leveraging General Motors' sort of breadth is our commitment to electrification and being able to bring different products that are electrified into these fleets. So in Maven City, for example, the Volt is a great vehicle, and we have it in nearly every city that we're in multiple versions. And so if you're running errands or you're going on a long trip, you can easily rent the Volt and drive electric most of the time. Similarly, about a year ago, we started putting our Bolt EV into our Maven Gig platform and have seen some real powerful results. After a year's time, I think we're about to cross the 10 million mile mark of EV miles on a fleet of several hundred vehicles. And so it's good for the folks who are driving it. You know, it's a cheaper total cost of ownership because, you know, electricity is cheaper on a per gallon basis than a gallon of gasoline. But also, to your point, you're making those zero emission miles. And another neat benefit is people who have never been in an electric vehicle then get a chance to sit in the back seat of an Uber and Lyft that's one of our vehicles and really get the chance to experience electrification. So, and I think we're about to cross the million people in the back seat of our cars. So there's a lot of neat benefits of trying to leverage sort of broader GM to really deploy sort of zero emission vehicles into these types of shared mobility fleets.
And for Earth Day, Maven, there's actually a discount of $5 off. What's that all about?
So it thanks, yeah, and you know, obviously we all have to pay the bills, but I think more importantly, if you're curious about Maven and you're curious about mobility and sharing, I think what we're trying to do is anybody who's in that space, our members, to say thank you, but also people to join. We have a promo code, green, as in the color green, GREEN, 2018, and you get $5 off the reservations. Again, more as if you're curious and trying to examine, does this work for me? Can it work for me? It's a great, you know, for the weekends. Is it good for the weekdays? I'd encourage folks to take advantage of it. There's a lot of neat things happening in the mobility space across the board, and I think Maven can add some pretty significant value to both our members as well as the communities that we're operating in.
And today, April 21st, although you have to drive quite a ways to get there, I guess you have a relationship with the National Park Service, and you can get into national parks for free today, right?
Yep. So a lot of opportunities. So I'd encourage folks, I'm an EV advocate, but I'm also, you know, a father and whatnot, to spend the day thinking about sort of our habits. To me, Earth Day is exactly that, spending a little bit of time thinking about how we interact with the Earth and how we can, you know, be a little bit more sustainable in the way we do things. So all of these things in my mind sort of add up to you can have a pretty positive Earth Day and think about these things that our impacts and how do we improve what we're trying to accomplish in our communities.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the numbers. I guess 327,000 gallons of gas has been saved, and a lot of personal vehicles off the road that are congesting the roadways and causing some traffic jams. So pretty amazing stuff. If people want to find out more information about Maven and General Motors' relationship with Maven, where do they go?
Just pretty quickly, just Google, Maven, Drive Maven. If you check out maven.com, you'll be able to find us.
Well, Alex, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning and join us up here in Boston, and have a happy Earth Day tomorrow.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, I don't know whether – I mean, I think it's great. I mean, car sharing is a good thing. I get kind of even – you know, I drive a lot of different cars, but I have my own car, and I get sort of attached to it a little bit. And I don't know. This whole car sharing – but I guess if you live in the city, if you live in one of the 12 or so towns that Alex mentioned, that you're – you know, if it's Detroit or Manhattan or Boston or Orlando, where maybe you live really in the city and having a car is like having another mortgage payment because you're not just paying for the car, you're paying for someplace to park it. Maybe it's an idea. And it's there when you need it. But I don't know. I like having my own car.
And not, like I was saying, it's, and I don't want to bring up a competitor, but it sounds like Zipcar to me.
A little bit.
And Zipcar.
Which got bought by Enterprise, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yep. Which, because they were failing. It's a failing industry because people don't want to share their vehicle.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Everybody points to the millennials. You're not one of them, are you?
No.
No.
I'm a Gen X guy.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But the millennials, they're like, well, millennials don't want cars. They're not buying cars. The millennials aren't buying cars. And then what happened was they weren't buying cars until they had kids, and then their kids had stuff, and then they had to have all of that stuff together, and they said, you know what? It's a lot of stuff. We need a car. So our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030 is how you get through and talk to us about your car, your car problems, or whatever's on your mind about cars. You're welcome to call us, and we will try to come up with some sort of an answer. Why don't we talk to, we haven't talked to George from West Hartford in a long time. Good morning, George.
Good morning. How are you doing, John Paul?
I'm doing good, and you?
Good. I would just like your opinion on being, you know, an automotive journalist. Have you seen the pictures of the 2019 Camaro?
I have.
Okay. Everything I've been seeing on social media, YouTube from all Camaro owners, which I agree, say how hideous the front end is, and it looks like the front end of a Toyota Camry. And what I'd like to ask you is, yeah, I don't know what General Motors is thinking. I mean, you look at the Challenger. It's basically the same body style from 08. You look at the new Mustang, you know, it's the fastback with the tri-bar taillights looking like the original. You look at the new Bullet. They're going after the original Bullet with the color, the wheels, and everything. I just don't know what General Motors and what their brass is thinking. To me, this looks like, you remember in 93 when they changed the Camaro? And it was a complete failure, and they stopped making it.
Yep.
To me, it's like they're going to do this all over again.
Well, you know, when they first came out with the new redesigned Camaro a bunch of years ago, you know, it didn't. It was a little too much cartoonish, I think, is the way it went.
Mm-hmm.
And then they smoothed it out in the last couple of years. And really, I really like the lines of it in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And this latest rendition. The latest rendition, I'm going to hold off judgment till I actually see it because,
mm-hmm.
for instance, I was walking by a big giant picture of a Nissan Altima at the New York Auto Show, and I'm like, that thing looks mm-hmm. awful. And then they pulled the cover off of it, and I'm like, that thing actually looks really good. So sometimes mm-hmm. some cars in pictures don't look that good. So I'm kind mm-hmm. of reserving a little bit of judgment for – you know, how when I really see it. But it does look like uh-huh. they, you know, you said something about, you know, the Mustang Bullet looks kind of like the Mustang Bullet, and the Challenger looks kind of like a Challenger. And there's some thought that eventually that kind of retro look will start to maybe fade away a little bit. But so far, it hasn't happened. I kind of like the retro look, and you know, Volkswagen did that when they came out with the new Beetle came out, and then they sort of flattened it out and squished it a little bit, made it a little bit bigger and longer. And some people Some people didn't like the new change. I happen to like the new change a lot when they did that. One of the cars that I was a little disappointed they stopped making was the Ford Thunderbird. The Ford Thunderbird, when that came out in 2000, whatever it was, 2002, I liked that car a lot. I thought that car had a lot of style, reminiscent of the 55 to 57 Thunderbird. And, you know, it sort of falls into that category of, you know, what's old is new again sort of thing. And with the new Camaro, maybe they're trying to get away from it. Maybe they're trying to get it to stand on its own and be not retro, but to be the, you know, 21st century Camaro, just like this mid-engine Corvette, which has popped up in pictures here and there to try to build some excitement about it. It might have to do with that, too. It might have to do with the idea that the old is old and the new is going to be new and different and improved. And maybe it gets to the point, you know, maybe they're starting to look like BMW did when they came out with the 5 Series BMW a bunch of years ago. And I remember the design guy for BMW when somebody said, you know, the back of that thing is ugly. And he said, get over it. That's the new look. Maybe that's the kind of designers they have at General Motors now that say, well, you don't like it. That's too bad. That's what we're going to do. I don't know.
I just think it's a dangerous move because I think the pony car buyer is a different type of buyer looking for a different thing. And you want a car that looks different, that doesn't look like the mainstream, that catches the eye, that looks different from everything else. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you because if you look at most mid-sized cars today, you look at a Camry or an Accord or a Chevy Malibu or, you know, a Ford Fusion. You know, if you look at a silhouette of them, they all sort of look the same. They're all sort of the same,
correct.
You know, and to have a car that's stylish and looks different, I think is important for the vehicle manufacturers. But until that happens, I don't know. But like I said, I'll reserve my judgment when I actually get to see it in person because I have been fooled before by cars that in pictures are not that attractive, but in real life, you know, you look at them, you go, you know, that's a nice looking car, so.
Okay, John Paul. Thank you.
Okay.
I wanted your opinion as an automotive journalist. Thank you.
All right.
You so
thank
much.
You. Thank you, George. Take care now.
Yep. Bye.
Yep. Bye bye. 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030 is how you get through and talk to us about your car problems, maybe whatever you have on your mind. Let's talk to Paul in Braintree.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, not bad. Not bad. I probably can answer my own question. And the answer is because they can. Why are gas prices, why have they spiked so high?
Well, you want the nonsense answer? The nonsense answer is geopolitical tensions, the switch over to summer fuel.
We're going to actually have summer?
They have summer fuel, so they switch, well, someday, you know, temperatures above 40 degrees. That's
okay.
that's the new summer, temperatures above 40. There has been a production shortfall on purpose, so there has been less production, and all of that together, and a higher draw from reserves, and that has caused the market to spike up.
Oh, okay.
The real answer is how do you control? How do you control gas prices? It as much as, yes, if something happens in the Middle East or something happens in Russia, if something happens somewhere where they're producing gas and oil and it impacts the flow of gas and oil and the overall world market of how much is available, that's going to make a real difference. But the reality of it is, even with that, a lot of it's supply, demand, and speculation. And if the demand is steady and the supply gets tight, it tends to drive the price up. If all of that happens at the same time, then what happens is you run into this problem with the speculators. The stock market says, oh, well, we better jump on oil and gas because there's a shortage of supply and it's going to drive the price up. So how do you change it? You make more.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they made less, and that's why.
I've even noticed even the off brands are almost it's almost not worth going to an off brand.
Yeah, because
they're as high as
the off brands buy off the spot market, so they buy off the market that's truly driven by Wall Street. So that's why sometimes the no name, and it could be, you know, Stop and Shop or something for that matter, their prices will tend to be up around the Shell and Mobiles, because the Shell and Mobil tends to control their price, where the other ones get bought off the mercantile exchange. So they're subject to what's really going on in the wholesale gas market.
You know, BJ's is sometimes less, but, you know.
Not really. Not that much, yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, so, yeah. There's a Citgo near me and family run for about 80, 90 years, so, I mean, I really give them the business.
And Citgo is a good quality fuel with good additive packages in it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I really think, And I agree with you on the Thunderbird. I suppose that, when did it come out, about 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah, something like that, yep.
It's probably become, I see a lot of them around now, whether people are collecting them. They're really, they are retro, but they're really, a classic in the making.
No, I like them. And a quick story, I got to go because our guest is on the phone. But I was getting gas with a Thunderbird years ago, and there was a woman and her husband, I'll say husband, behind me getting gas with their Jaguar convertible. And he kind of looked at it and said, "Hey, that's pretty nice, you know." And I said, "Yeah, and I think it was a fully loaded one at the time. It was less than $30,000. And apparently the Jaguar cost about $80,000. And his wife was not happy because she's like, I like that better. So there you go. Hey, we got to go. Hey, with us on the phone is our long-lost friend, Matt Williams from Hearts. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, John Paul. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Sorry, I'm just getting going here.
That's all right. Things are all good. Don't worry about it. You know, it's that time of year. It's spring cleaning time of year, and people are cleaning out their houses, their apartments, their cars. But it's also time maybe to spring clean your car, whether it's old or new, and to take care of your convertible top. And Hearts, you guys have been in the convertible top manufacturing business for how many years?
Well, we have history dating back into the late 1800s, but as the current corporation as we are today, we date back to 1922.
Well, either way, that's a long time. In fact, I always like it when I look at some of the old car magazines like Hemmings and others, and it will talk about a restoration of a, you know, 19 something or other, and it'll say Hearts, you know, Hearts replacement top or something like that, knowing that you have replaced the top with a top that was manufactured, that was the top that was on the car when it was new, rather than some aftermarket replacement.
Yeah, that's a lot of our history, and that's what gives us that prestige in the marketplace. We've been in it since the very beginning of car manufacture with coated fabrics for roofs, and take pride in the fact that we still maintain a lot of the original materials and textures and colors in our product lineup, and can help those vintage car restorers recreate those original looks on the car. So that's a big part of what we do, and we try to service the industry that way.
Yeah. Now, if somebody has been driving their, say, Jeep Wrangler all winter, and it has, you know, salt spray on it and dirt on it and everything else on it, how do you go about cleaning that waterproof fabric top that's on that Jeep so you don't do any damage to it?
Yep. So Hearts advocates a regular care and cleaning, but if it's going to be after a full season of use over the winter, as you say, certainly you want to go through a pretty detailed cleaning. And while there's a full set of instructions on our website, we first recommend that you determine whether the vehicle has a vinyl or a cloth roof on, because that's actually a new feature on the Wrangler, for example. But even the majority of new cars out there today have cloth topping on them. So identification of whether you have a vinyl or a cloth top roof on your vehicle is first and foremost. And then, as described on our website, we recommend the Ragtop cleaner and protectant products. First, for cleaning the roof with warm water, soft bristle brush, or even the Ragtop brush, using the premium convertible car top cleaner. And then when it goes to protect it afterwards, that's where the identification of whether it's a vinyl or a cloth top is important. If it's a vinyl top, convertible top vinyl protectant product is imperative because it adds back some of those UV absorbers and other lubricants on the surface of the vinyl that help keep it looking longer and more flexible over its life. And then if it's a cloth top, the finish and the protectant is actually more of a water repellent product. It gets into the fibers of the fabric and helps build up a repellent finish, a DWR, we call it, durable water repellent finish, that keeps dirt and debris from settling into that fabric because it helps the water sheet off the surface of the roof and keeps it looking cleaner longer.
Here in New England, we're kind of tough on cars anyway, but if you take care of your convertible top, how long should it last?
So a lot of the lifespan of the vehicle is somewhat dependent upon the quality and the engineering that went into not only the material that we put on the roof, but also the design of the folding mechanism and how the roof is stored when it's down. Unfortunately, a lot of these roofs were forced to make compromises with the package space that we have for that roof behind the rear seats, and the amount of trunk space that the OEMs want to allow for the consumers to store things in the back of the car. So there's always a balancing act, and every roof is different. However, I'll say that generally, most modern convertibles, you can expect at least a 7 to 10 year lifespan before they really show a significant amount of wear and need a replacement.
And for the most part, it's just kind of, like you said, taking care of it, you know, not cleaning the snow off of it with a shovel. You know,
correct.
Yeah. So treat it like it's not a piece of metal, but in fact, you know, it can be injured. But it is something that if you take care of it, it should get some pretty good life out of it. And I think that's a little bit of the compromise. If you enjoy top down motoring, you want to be able to say, well, okay, if I really like driving with the top down, I really like whether it's here in New England or, you know, in warm weather states or wherever the case is, you want to be able to enjoy your convertible, and that's part of it. Also at Hartz, you guys have managed to blend some colors into stuff that has never been done before, like put striping in a convertible top, which is really sort of at the forefront of the industry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturers, have pushed us to enhance the design functionality of the topping material. So given the fact that a convertible top covers 30% or so of the exterior surface of a car, it's a great styling statement. And we've done a lot of work to develop custom colors, blends of colors, stripes, as you mentioned. So if you take the example of the 60th anniversary Corvette, we had a tone-on-tone stripe effect that we introduced into that vehicle where there were body paint appliques running up the hood and then down the back deck lid, but in between we ran those stripes and matched the width and color of those stripes along the convertible top itself. So those types of design features, we've done things with plaid patterns on roofs, if there's been a couple of vehicles that have looked for that type of effect. And then the most striking one, I'd say, and really eye-catching, is on the Mini Cooper. Today on a Mini Cooper you can have an option for a Union Jack woven into the roof. So the British flag, the iconic symbol of the Mini, woven right into the entire center deck and center area of the roof. So a big Union Jack that everybody will see as you drive down the road. And we're constantly working with the OEMs to come up with new versions of those types of designs because, again, the convertible top is a unique styling statement and gives them the freedom to express some of their design concepts on the outside of the car.
Yeah. Before we let you go, and you guys aren't just in the top business, you provide a lot of materials for the inside of cars, door panels and cards, some of the surfaces around the seats. You guys are responsible for the materials for a lot of those too, right?
Absolutely. So we manufacture various forms of door panel, instrument panel, center console lid, seat cover, soft trim. So these are either cut and sewn to make like a seat cover or thermoform to make a part on a door. And really, it's an area where we've excelled in the last 25 years or so based upon the OEMs wanting to really upgrade the feel and touch and luxury of the inside of the vehicle. And it's a very large part of our business and a globally expanding part of our business as well.
And your coworker Doug said to me one time, when you buy a car with a leather interior and they say, look at these leather seats, it's a little bit like the Bob's Furniture commercial. It may be leather where you sit, but the rest of it, it might be not leather, and it might come from you guys, right?
That's absolutely true. So sometimes when they do that, really it's only the part in the very center of the seat that touches your backside that has the leather.
Yep.
But our job at Hartz is really to develop materials that feel as good as real leather, but last as long or longer.
Yep.
And we're finding that the OEMs want to adopt those types of products across the entire seat cover, and that's certainly our goal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And one more thing before we let you go, Hartz is one of the big manufacturers of all these products, and you're headquartered in where?
In Acton, Massachusetts.
In Acton, Massachusetts. You know, you would think you'd be in, you know, Germany or Detroit or I don't know, somewhere in South Carolina, but no, you're in little Acton, Massachusetts, of all places, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, we moved there in the mid-1960s. Previous locations in New England included New Haven, Connecticut, and Watertown, Massachusetts. But in the mid-1960s, the family decided to move the company there to Acton. And really, we've expanded a lot. Our facility there now sits on over 40 acres and has over 400,000 square feet under roof and employs over 400 people in the state of Massachusetts. So we're quite proud of that history and what we're doing to support the economy today.
No, that's great. Hey, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your Saturday morning and joining us a little east of you, I guess. So,
no problem. My pleasure. And you have a great day.
All right. You too, Matt. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John-Paul. Bye-bye.
So a little late, but still good, you know, and go to their website. It's got an extra A in it, just in case you're confused, HAARTZ. So find out information about how to take care of your convertible top. And they are the people that made the convertible top for my wife's car, which not due to their problem, but due to a manufacturing issue with Volkswagen, is going to need to be replaced.
Off the subject a little bit. Did you
on this program?
No. Off the subject of car tops. Oh. I saw something. Pontiac's coming back.
Really?
There was a Pontiac. There was an ad in something that I saw and said Pontiac something or other. I'm like, wait a second.
Well, the only thing I saw at the New York Auto Show, there was a company that took a bunch of Camaros and turned them into Transams.
Give me a couple names of Pontiac cars that were made.
Grand Am.
No.
Grand Prix.
No. Maybe it was Grand Prix.
Le Mans.
No, maybe it was a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
I thought I saw something about it coming back.
No, I don't think so.
I wish they'd bring back the Cutlass.
They probably will. It's just a Chevy. So
I know.
They could do it easy enough. Why don't we take another break? Because I need to sip a little bit more tea. And if you want to call, and I'm sorry if we had somebody on hold, if you want to call in now, 617-770-3030. We still have time for a car review and some trivia, so put your trivia thinking cap on. Dennis is going, oh, it makes him think. We'll be right back.
It's true, I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's. Got 8 cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall.
Welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM. Listen on FM. It sounds pretty good if you're in the general area, at least. Okay, our car review is based on a BMW X3, but our trivia question, if you want to play trivia, name one of the two movies featuring a BMW. So name one of the two James Bond movies featuring... I left out James Bond, didn't I? Yeah. Name one of the two James Bond movies featuring a BMW. So if you know the answer to that, give us a call at 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030. Name one of the two James Bond movies featuring a BMW and not an Aston Martin. Okay, the BMW X3 has been redesigned and grown in just about every dimension. The latest model is slightly longer, wider, and taller than previous models. There are two versions of the X3, one with the turbocharged four-cylinder engine and a more powerful turbocharged six-cylinder engine. Both models are only available in all-wheel drive. Our road test was in the X3 M4.0i or M40i. The interior of the X3 is well done. The seats are quite firm but remain comfortable even after several hours on the road. In our higher trim level X3, there's a large, easy-to-read infotainment system that used BMW's iDrive system. The iDrive system was overly complicated when introduced and now has become a bit simpler and much easier to master. The updated system also is compatible with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. I have an iPhone and found the syncing of the phone to the system was simple, although I would still rate the functionality at a B. The shifter uses a lever-mounted lever-mounted between the seats.
Yeah,
yeah. A lever-mounted between the seats. I got to start wearing glasses. That's all there is to it. There's a certain little methodology you have to use to shift it. So, like, instead of a normal car that has click, 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 you have to press a button, shift it into drive. Well, if you pull into someplace and you need to back up and then go back into drive, you can't just stick it in drive because you have to push the little button on the side to shift it in drive. So,
well, that might help those people who accidentally hit the accelerator when they think they're in reverse.
It could. It could. I don't know. I just found it when I'm in a hurry, it's the time I don't push the little buttons when I'm supposed to. So, anyway, the rest of the controls are typical BMW, maybe a bit odd at first, but once mastered, they work as designed. It seems to be the case with some cars. It's like you look at it and you go, why would they do that? And then after a little while, you kind of get used to it and you go, maybe they might have been right. The rear seat can accommodate at least two adults in reasonable comfort. During my road test, I had a 6-foot passenger sitting behind me and the front seats pushed about as far rearward as they could go. And it was still reasonably comfortable for the person back there. Cargo storage is about 28 cubic feet with the seats in use. It grows to 63 cubic feet with the seats folded. I also like the idea there are plenty of bins and cubbies and a couple of well-designed cup holders. On the road, the X3 handles much more like a sports sedan and an SUV. The ride's a bit firm with large performance-oriented tires. The steering was nicely balanced both around town and out on the highway. Our test vehicle had three different performance settings: economy, comfort, and sport. The economy mode traded sporty performance for better fuel economy. In sport mode, the ride became almost too firm, but I really did like the way what it did to the exhaust. Take your foot off the accelerator, bah, 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 popped, and just had that sort of sports car sound. And for all I know, it was coming out of the speakers, because BMW's tricky that way. But for the most part, I had it in comfort mode, which got pretty good power. The engine itself produces 355 horsepower, so it's really quick. The power arriving almost instantaneously. Fuel economy, EPA 20 miles per gallon city, 27 highway. I averaged about a solid 23 miles per gallon in mixed driving. The BMW X3 is easy to recommend if you're looking for a luxury SUV that handles like a sports sedan while still having the utility of a more typical SUV. Like I said, the engine in our car was a 3-liter, 355 horsepower, six-cylinder. Fuel economy, 20 city, 27 highway, and price as tested, $65,290. I've been driving a lot of, and because of the New England Motor Press Winter Vehicle of the Year competition, I'm sort of driving a lot of the vehicles that were in various components of the competition. Let's talk to Peter in South Yarmouth. Peter.
John Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. It's a beautiful day out here. I'm up in Harwich right now.
Well, there you go.
Sitting in the sun. Yeah, it's beautiful out. Before I make an attempt at the trivia question.
Yes.
Of all of the cars and vehicles you've driven or heard, which one did you, the most pleasing exhaust sound?
The most pleasing exhaust sound?
you know, the best sound, you know, that, you know, there's a certain cars, you know, Ferrari has theirs and this and that. But of all of them, which one do you find most pleasing? You know, you just
I'm not an exotic car guy, and you know, one of my co-writers, I guess, Cliff Attia is, and occasionally I see him driving a Ferrari, and that has an awfully nice sound to it. But I have to say that the engine in exhaust on Chrysler's high performance cars, whether it's the 392 engine that's in the any of the SRT cars like the Challenger or the Charger, the engine that's in the Hellcat, that exhaust sounds very nice without being obnoxious. So while you're in the car, it sounds good. When you're out of the car, it sounds good. It's a little shocking when you maybe start it with the remote car starter on a quiet morning and it burbles a little bit when it first starts. But other than that, that's one I like a lot. The other one I like, the other exhaust I like is the exhaust in the Ford Mustang. That sounds really nice as well. So for exhaust sounds, I like those two a lot.
Yeah. Have you ever driven a Hellcat?
I have.
Yeah.
I have.
Well, I haven't, but it must be something.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, 707 horsepower, and like I said to Scott from Jeep, you know, when you got to put that Hellcat engine in a Wrangler? And apparently Chrysler hasn't done it, but somebody has already done it. So there's some crazy people out there. So what's your guess on trivia?
All right. Well, I was racking my memory banks, thinking, was one of the Bond movies GoldenEye?
One of the Bond movies was GoldenEye.
So you are correct. Was that the one that they had that gigantic saw blade that cut it right in half, cut the BMW right down the middle.
Yeah, it was a 95. It was a 95 BMW, and with most Bond movies, the car comes with features you won't see, such as a parachute, headlight missiles. You know, you got to have all those kind of things, and
it was a
Z3.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. So,
you definitely need that for your Honda. You
yeah, that, I do. Yeah, I need a parachute on my car. Yeah, stay right there, and Dennis will get your address, and we'll send you out some. Right. We'll send you out. Well, we won't send you out a Hellcat, but we'll send you out something. Okay. All right. So take care of that. Let's go to John. John, is that you? John.
John.
Yes, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I called in a couple of weeks ago about getting an exhaust system fixed, and wanted to let you know my experience with Lou's Custom Exhaust.
Okay.
And,
all right.
Turned out, I mean, when we bought the car and they took us under, showed us what happened, which was the weld.
Which Lou's was this? Because there seems to be a bunch of them.
Stoughton,
okay. All right.
So they took us out of the car, showed us what happened, which was the weld failed on the bracket that attaches the muffler to the pipe that goes to the resonator.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said, you know, sockets in there. So he basically just cut out both sides of the bracket and then gave you an option to either weld on a piece of, like, aluminized.
Yeah. Hello? Hello?
I dropped him by accident. Sorry.
Oh, Dennis, fast fingers, Dennis, just disconnect, and right in the middle of the good story, too, so hopefully he calls right back, so we know more, so we want to hear more about the story about Lou's Custom Exhaust, and I want to know about the business itself. Is there a guy named Lou? Is there a guy named Big Lou that owns a bunch of muffler shops? I think John's back with us. John, is that you? You were right in the middle of the good story.
Yeah. So again, they gave you an option of, like, you know, old steel aluminized pipe, which was like $70 to fix it with a 1-year warranty, or stainless, which I think was like $110, and they give you a 5-year warranty.
Okay.
So I thought it was pretty good. I'm just wondering, I mean, is this the type of thing that you can have done anywhere with a stainless system these days, or you really need to find somebody who's more specialized in exhaust to make that type of repair?
Well, I mean, welding stainless on its own is a little bit tricky anyway. So, so you have to have somebody who's a welder. I mean, I have a MIG welder. I can't weld anything. I can maybe stick two pieces of clean metal together on a good day. But that's about all I can do. But somebody who's an actual welder can do artwork and can do magic stuff with welding. So, can any good repair shop cut out a piece of rusty metal, put in a new piece? Well, if they have an exhaust bending machine and a bunch of pipe and stock, sure. But not that many people do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I thought Lou's was excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
They
came to the car, explained exactly. Yeah. He said everything else looks great.
Yeah.
You know, it's all stainless.
So in other words, your whatever $100 repair saved you probably $700 or $800, where somebody else would have said, oh, we have to replace the whole exhaust system.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the way it used to work, was you went in for your pre-mite muffler.
Yep.
But, of course, there were, like, a couple of $200 pipes that had to be replaced at the same time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those lifetime mufflers were the cheapest part of the whole exhaust system. It was, a $20 muffler and a bunch of expensive pipes. So,
I mean, I thought Lou's was excellent.
Yeah. I was always interested. Is there like one guy named Lou who owns a bunch of garages and he calls it Lou's Custom Exhaust, or is it some sort of franchise?
Yeah, I think it's a franchise.
Yeah.
I think the original Lou's might have been up in, like, Reading or like that. But, I mean, I pulled up their website, and they've got, like, probably 25 locations all around New England at this point. But the one in Stoughton was great.
Good to hear. Well, thanks for the info.
All right, John. Have a good
All right, weekend. You as well. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. We're going over to Michael in Bridgewater. Mike, is that you?
Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, sir, thank you. I hope you're well as well. John, have you had any experience with the Honda Clarity Hybrid by any chance?
No. I've seen it, but that's all I've done. I've never driven it. I've never – when I was out in California a couple months ago, they were pushing them big at the dealerships. They were all I saw them in every time I went by a Honda dealership, they were like, come in and test drive the Clarity. In fact – when I was at the local AAA office out there, the folks from Honda actually did drop a Clarity off for the woman who runs the emissions lab to do some testing with it, just to see how it was gonna work out. And I've seen it, I've sat in it, I haven't driven it, I don't know anything about it. I like the style of it. I'm more interested in what it's going to be like when it's a pure electric that runs on hydrogen, which is the only Clarity I've ever driven was a hydrogen Clarity, which really doesn't count.
Sure.
Yeah.
I did want to share with you that they're advertising, it's called HondaClarityEvent.com.
Okay.
And going around the country, and you can sign up for a drive. And April 12th and 13th at the South Shore Plaza, they're having one of those. So they're doing it, I guess, at plazas and
maybe May 12th.
Okay, John. Thanks. Correction. Yeah.
You got me concerned for a minute because I'm like, is it March? It feels like March. You walk outside, it feels like March. It doesn't feel like April.
Waiting for summer as well.
Yeah.
All right. So that's one of the things. But they're all different places.
Yep.
Providence, Worcester. So if people in the area want, it's HondaClarityEvent.com. Two other things, if I may.
Sure.
I want to share with you my AAA experience for getting my real ID.
Okay.
And, John, it was great. It was probably maybe 20 minutes.
All right.
From walking in, filling out the paperwork, having them scan the documents, and walking off with a temporary. It was really great.
Good.
Recommend it to anyone that wants to have this done, especially you reminded me that you can go a year ahead.
Yeah.
So I went in early, so that made it pretty neat as well.
Good.
And finally, a few weeks back you were talking about, wouldn't it be great to be able to go to use heavy-duty equipment?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of
heavy equipment fantasy camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if somebody told you, but there's a place called Diggerland USA.
Oh, yeah. Somebody did actually mention that. Yeah.
Okay, good, because it's only 20 minutes in Philadelphia. And if the missus is listening, maybe this could be a present to you at some point, maybe down the road for you. So Diggerland USA.
Diggerland USA. There we go.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, Mike. All right. Yep.
I'll try to stay in. I'll try to stay in May next time.
Thank there you, you go. All right. Take care. Bye bye. Yeah. You know, 25 years ago, I said heavy equipment fantasy camp. That's the next big thing, and like many big things that I had ideas of that I never actually completed. So, let's talk to Jim and Quincy before we wrap up. Jim.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a quick question. I have a 2014. Toyota Tacoma.
Yep.
And it has a plastic-like, it's not really a bed liner. I don't know if it's the bed itself, but it marks up pretty quickly when you're using it. And I wonder if you knew of any way to make it look new again without painting it, or I don't know if you had any.
Yeah. If it's actually scratching the surface of it, There's probably some kind of a almost like a tire dressing you could put on it. But what I would do, I would swing into a detail shop and just ask somebody to come out and take a look at it and see if they have a product that they can recommend that would work for that. But I have a feeling that they put that there just for that purpose, so it scratches up rather than scratches up any metal. And you know, it's never going to rust, and you know that's part of it. You know, some pickup trucks use the sprayed in bed liner. Some have a plastic kind of insert bed liner, which that like right now I'm driving a pickup truck, and it has a bed liner that sits inside of it, but it looks like it's made right into it. So it isn't like a removable bed liner. It looks like it's made right into it, but in fact, it is just a bed liner. But yeah, I would try a detail shop. I think maybe you could clean it up with denatured alcohol. That might take some of the, you know, clean it, and then to try to get, because it does have a little bit of a gloss to it, I would think some sort of a vinyl protectant, but almost like a something that's got almost like a pasty consistency to it might bring some of it back. But I would ask a detail shop and see if they have an idea first.
Can you recommend a one around Quincy?
I was just looking into the detail shops for my car. There's one just over the Four River Bridge that people that I know, Finishing Touch Auto Detailing.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we did a remote there once, years back.
He's out of business.
Oh, he's out of business.
He's out of business? I just drove past there the other day.
Really?
Yeah, it was two young guys, and they were really good, too.
Immediately on the left when you go over the bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. No, he's gone.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah,
you know, the other thing is, you know, check with your Toyota dealer and see if they have somebody they recommend.
Okay.
Yeah, they might have somebody. That's the only one I knew out in that area. I know there was a guy over on Route 18 in Weymouth, kind of opposite whatever that is, the Route 18. I don't know. It's a bar
he's
restaurant.
Still there.
They always did a pretty good job. So.
You mentioned mufflers earlier, and I just want to put a plug in for this guy on Quincy Avenue who does mufflers, and he's been there for a long time. He's done a very good job, and he's not out to rob you.
The people that back years ago when a lot of people went out and bought exhaust bending machines, and some of them were more sophisticated than others. Some of them you would actually have to you could program them. They'd bend a tailpipe to fit your car just by kind of a kind of early computer program. It was more like a punch card sort of thing. And others, you would bend up a heavy piece of. I saw a guy use a piece of wire to actually kind of make the template, and then kind of bend it from there. Those people that were good with those machines were outstanding with them, and they could bend things, and they were good welders. And really, what it comes down to, it's being a good welder. And welding has gotten sort of easy with MIG welders and TIG welders now, but the people that know how to really weld are so good at it. I could take my welder, which I could blame for, you know, why I can't weld, it's the crappy welder I have, and give it to somebody who knows how to weld, and they would do a perfect weld. It would look like your traditional row of dimes laying on its side. So, but that's not me. I've never been good at it. So,
well, they'll also give you a good deal on, you know, only replace that piece that you need.
Yep. No, that's nice to do, especially with today's exhausts that, you know, some exhausts will outlast the engine in the car, but if it's a break because of a weld that failed, you cut out the piece, you put in a new one, and the rest of it's going to last forever. So, yeah, all good stuff.
Very good.
All right, thanks, Jim. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, look, it's Paul Sullivan right there. Right there with his hat.
Got my Scally cap. You have to be more specific.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is radio, you know.
You know, well, we could turn this on, but we don't know how. We don't know how to turn the Facebook camera on.
What's this thing?
It's a microphone stuck in my cell phone.
Does it work?
When I use it.
No, I mean, can I tell it's not your cell phone?
It sounds better than my cell phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
And it's somewhat directional.
Yeah.
So one of these days when I go back to Florida again to, I guess, close up the place for the summer or whatever people
do.
It's
too hot down there.
Yeah. Well, it's not bad yet. But that's,
well, no, because it's not hot anywhere.
Yeah. But that's my remote studio right
there.
That's
cool.
Right there. That's about all there is to it.
Well, it sounded good last time I...
Well, it's good.
Hey, look what I found.
But that was... look, a digital clock.
It's the official United States time right to the second.
Right there, by the second.
Yeah.
I used to set my watch to that.
Did it work?
Yeah.
For how long? Like a day.
One of us was right and one of us was wrong a couple days later.
Hey, I just slept back yesterday from D.C. We were down for a couple days to see the kids. And
they're
driving. So, you know, Claire doesn't let me drive, so she drives.
Smart move.
Well, but for the first time we actually saw, it wasn't a crash because nobody ever crashed, but a big tractor trailer went from one of the inside lanes, it was a left exit, and just turned.
Mm.
Meanwhile, the other cars that were in those other lanes, are all, one of them spun off the road and stuff like that. So I got a new idea.
What's
right.
That?
And you probably can confirm this, that most accidents on the highway are the result of somebody changing lanes. So after that, as I just kind of said, look at everybody changing lanes. There should be sensors in the white lines that can count how many times a driver changes lanes, because I don't think that's safe. And then if they surpass a certain threshold, then there should be some taxation or penalties. What do you think?
That's a stupid idea.
See? I have a lot of ideas, not a lot of them are really good.
Well, it's interesting because there is, I was reading an article about automated enforcement in Australia.
Yeah.
And they're actually mounting cameras on bridges that will be able to detect if you're using your phone.
Yeah, see, I'm not big on that, but I think there's such a safety factor in
that. Well, because if you use your cell phone or if you text, the chances of getting into a crash go up exponentially.
Yeah.
So based on that, that's one of their ways they're trying to enforce it.
So it is safety.
It is safety.
Yeah,
so it is, yeah. So same thing, somebody who's speed racer going back and forth, and if you've ever followed one of those people, you know, 4 miles later, they're one car ahead of you.
I know. That's what I mean.
And all they do is cause a lot of problems.
Right.
So.
Which is aggravating.
Yeah. Could you tax them? You know, but are they breaking the law?
No.
Not really.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. We don't need any more laws.
No, we don't.
We have enough.
We got enough.
Hey.
I love how you said my idea was stupid. That's really nice. Thank you. Thank you for that. I will not pursue that.
Well, I've been told I'm not direct enough.
Well, you are with me. If I have any power at all, that was truth to power.
Hey, well, you know, coming up next, a well-rested Paul Sullivan in the Irish Hit Parade, the very best in Irish music right here for the next hours and hours and hours and hours. 23, 4, 5, 6, 7 seconds late. I got to go. See you all next week. Wear your seatbelt. Drive safely. Be good to your car. Bye-bye.